This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
The heart. We often think of it in romantic terms. Oh, you stole my heart. You broke my heart. Ah, you make my heart go pitter-patter. But this small biological pump is so much more. The love dove, the heart's ability to pump blood throughout our bodies, is an amazing feat. Precision electromechanical and chemical coordination. But there are times when a pet's cardiovascular system becomes diseased, often with the same issues that affect their owner's body. Thankfully, there are veterinary specialists, such as my guest, Dr. Thomas Morrison, a board-certified veterinary cardiologist based in the Santa Barbara area of California. In the next half hour, we're going to chat about why your pet may need to be referred to a heart specialist and amazing advances in this critical field. We'll be right back after the short break.
Listeners, I'd love to introduce you to PetPlate.com. They deliver freshly cooked human-grade dog food right to your door. I'm talking about dog food that is so high quality that even us humans could technically eat it. I've been feeding PetPlate to my pup for the last 2 weeks, and it's perfect for my picky pup. And perfect for me since I'm so busy. So if you want something super healthy, really tasty, and ready to serve, go to petplate.com/spot to get 30% off your first box. Once again, that's petplate.com/spot to get 30% off your first box. PETPLATE.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Morrison, thank you so much for being with us today. I understand that you're driving to your next appointment, so I appreciate this is really a treat for us to have you on our air.
Oh, Dr. Cruz, thank you for this great honor of being able to chat with you today. Yes, I am on my way to the next hospital, but it is my distinct pleasure to be speaking with you today.
Well, I'd like to start off somewhat simplistically, because oftentimes people just really aren't aware what's going underneath their skin or going underneath the fur of their pet. So, lub-dub, what causes that noise?
Yeah, the lub-dub is the sound associated with valve closure. So, the heart, as you mentioned, is a simplified pumping mechanism. And when the powerhouse or the ventricles of that heart contract, it closes one door and kind of opens another. That creates the lub, and then when it's relaxing, to keep all that blood pressure in our body, closes another door or valve, and that creates the dub sound.
I know oftentimes when I'm listening to a pet and giving them a general physical examination, it's like, huh, I hear a murmur. And whenever I mention that, people, you can just see their whole body expression goes, oh my goodness, the pet has a heart murmur. How are heart murmurs grade it in their intensity, and how serious are heart murmurs?
Yeah, all a heart murmur is turbulent blood flow in the heart. So usually we're supposed to only hear the lub-dub associated with those valve closures. And if there is any turbulent flow, then that's what can create a murmur during the cardiac cycle. And we grade murmurs in different ways. One, by intensity. And there's a scale out of 6. From 1, a murmur that comes and goes, to 6, which is an auscultable murmur, not needing a stethoscope to hear. There's also qualifications or characteristics of a murmur, such as the timing. Is it occurring during systole, when the heart's squeezing, or diastole, when the heart's relaxing, or continuous, basically all the time? And then there's also a kind of an artistic profile of murmurs. They can either be plateau or what we refer to as crescendo decrescendo, which is a nice term referring to a murmur getting louder and then getting softer.
So you have a very good ear, because I know there are times listening, it's like, okay, I hear a murmur, and trying to do those nuances, that can be difficult for me. So I think it's just someone with a practice ear and somebody who does it all the time. When you're hearing these murmurs, how serious are they? So the one that comes and goes, not too bad. When do you have to start worrying about them?
Well, it's definitely worrisome if there's any clinical signs associated with the heart disease. But even with a murmur, it's always good to get a baseline echocardiogram. This is a diagnostic that uses sound waves to go into the body and then bounces back off of soft tissue densities and liquid densities. And it gives us a great image of what the heart looks like, how it's functioning, and the structure of the heart. And often when it comes to murmurs, there is a structural abnormality that's causing that turbulent flow. This gives us the primary cardiac diagnosis. And then often, more importantly, what is the heart doing about that primary abnormality? Are the chambers dilating? Are the walls thickening? And all of that information can give us a good indication of the severity of the disease.
Now, an echocardiogram sounds like an ultrasound that people would be familiar with, and it's called an echocardiogram just because of the heart, or is there a difference between an ultrasound and an echocardiogram?
You're absolutely right. It's an ultrasound of the heart itself. It does usually require a very specialized ultrasound, a probe that can basically fit through the ribcage, if you will, and get around those lungs. Because bone density and air density is something that the ultrasound cannot penetrate. Also, when it comes to the heart, it's an organ that's moving rather quickly. So the ultrasound or echocardiogram machine needs to be a certain level of sophistication to keep up with the speed of the heart.
So this is definitely where someone such as yourself, a board-certified cardiologist, is brought in, because I know at my practice, we can take an x-ray of the heart, we can do an ultrasound of the abdomen, and yeah, I can take a look at that heart too, but something like an echocardiogram, that's when a specialist is called in. So you have a pet that has a murmur, so we've done an echocardiogram. When would be an indication for taking something like an x-ray?
Oh, x-rays are wonderful for evaluating the lungs, both the vasculature or the arteries and the veins that are going and coming from the lungs, but also the lung tissue itself, something we refer to as the pulmonary parenchyma. And it's the x-rays that can penetrate those air densities and give us an indication of the pattern of the any possible pulmonary disease or issues. And also with the coordination in the analysis of the vasculature, it can give us an indication as to, all right, are the issues stemming from the lungs, or is the issue stemming from the heart and then backing up to the lungs secondarily?
You're so true, because there are times that pets come in and a cat is coughing or a dog is coughing. And I'm trying to determine, is this cough because of a heart, because maybe it has a bit of a murmur, or is this cough because it has some allergic airway conditions? And it can really be a diagnostic challenge at times. So we have a pet that has a murmur. You've done an echocardiogram. What else can be done as part of your baseline to figure out how devastating may this problem be, or is it something just that we're going to watch?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the x-rays can be very important in regards to assessing the severity of the disease. Another diagnostic a cardiologist will frequently use is an electrocardiogram. This maps the electrical activity of the heart. So if there's a diagnosis of an arrhythmia, which just means an abnormal beat, or sometimes a slow heart rate, or a heart rate that's too fast, it can give us a proper diagnosis of where that heartbeat is originating. And if it's anything other than the sinus node, which is supposed to control the electrical activity and the timing of the heartbeat, then that might be an indication that there's an arrhythmia, and that might require separate treatment modalities.
So when we hear or watch TV, a movie, and you see a flat line, that's the electrocardiogram, that EKG that says, that heart's not working anymore. So I love it when people come in and I can usually tell if they're a nurse or an MD and they go, oh my goodness, my dog has this real bad arrhythmia, or my cat, it's just the heart rhythm is totally off, and they're panicked because they took their stethoscope home and they listened to their pet and it's doing this little Congo beat inside. And oftentimes they take a listen going, nah, that's normal. So tell us about a sinus arrhythmia, which why it causes that in a pet. So how it speeds up and slows down.
Yeah, so a respiratory sinus arrhythmia is a phenomenon where the heart rate will increase and then decrease, correlating with the inhalation and exhalation of the breathing pattern. And there's a couple of schools of thought in terms of the change in intrathoracic pressure causing this variation, or if it's part of the respiratory center in the brain that's communicating with the heart rate and allowing this slowing and speeding up of the heart rate. But it needs to be correlated with the breathing pattern to get that diagnosis of respiratory sinus arrhythmia.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, it suggests that there's an increased vagal tone, which is referring to the autonomic nervous system, or sort of the body's automatic nervous system. And it suggests that there's more of a rest and relaxation going on in that heart, as opposed to the opposite of vagal innervation, which is sympathetic innervation, which is the fight and flight response that we're all familiar with.
Yes, like you're getting ready to run and you need to get that heart pumping really fast. What I find interesting is you were talking about the pacemaker in the heart, the SA node that keeps everything just moving at the right time. But there are times, and we don't always know why, that the heart is not beating and contracting in a coordinated fashion. And you think, well, for a person, you could do something like a pacemaker. But people go, of course, you can't do that for dogs and cats. But then your response to that, Dr. Morrison?
Yeah, great question. So if a heart rate was too slow, and despite medical intervention, such as a medication injection called atropine, the heart rate just isn't able to speed up at all, then we might consider pacemaker implantation. This could be done at most veterinary colleges or universities, and it can also be done at a number of private practice locations. So I think your listeners might be very surprised at how close their closest veterinary pacemaker might be.
Hopefully they never need it. There are certain breeds that tend to have cardiac issues, certain dogs, certain cats. I'd love to have you kind of give a general list of some of the ones that may have this. What are the diseases that can affect them? So people may have a Maine Coon cat, for instance, and not realize, oh, I better be aware of X.
Yeah, very good question. So Maine Coon cats are predisposed to develop a thickening of the heart that's referred to as hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. They're also prone to develop blood clots in the heart that can then dislodge and head toward different parts of the body. Other canine breeds, such as the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, are sort of the poster child for degenerative mitral valve disease. So that's one of the valves in the heart, specifically the Lub valve, that can be a little leaky. And instead of the blood flowing out to the body, this blood could be backing up into the lungs themselves, and that's when we would experience difficulty breathing. Some other breeds would be Boxers and Dobermans that are prone to a weakening of the heart muscle. That's referred to as dilated cardiomyopathy. So there's a number of different breeds out there that are predisposed to different and specific cardiac conditions, but we try not to come in with too many preconceived notions, just so that we can keep a broad mind in terms of what might be going on in each and every patient.
So if you have a Maine Coon cat, or it may be a mix, are there tests that can be done for these various cardiac diseases other than waiting for the clinical signs to show up? Can you, if you're a breeder, for instance, of Dobermans, or you want to, you know, you're out there, you want to get a Doberman puppy, and how do you know that you can increase your chances of your pet not being affected by one of these cardiac conditions?
Yeah, at this point, the best way to do that would be to look into the family tree. So basically, as far back as possible, see if there is any cardiac disease predisposed in the genetics of your potential pet. There are also genetic tests and markers out there that can indicate the presence of disease. Unfortunately, a lot of these diseases have multiple genetic loci that can cause the disease. So we always fall back on the phenotypic or the actual characteristics of the disease based on ultrasound, and reaching back as far as you can in the family tree will be your best bet in terms of obtaining a healthy pet.
And sometimes you just have no idea until all of a sudden it happens. And right now we just happen to be running into that commercial break. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to be back with Dr. Thomas Morrison, TJ, and we'll talk more about cardiac issues and your pet. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
You know that feeling when you go to clean the litter box and it's a complete disaster? Yeah, we've got you covered. Introducing World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the advanced litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. Zero Mess combines the concentrated power of corn with super absorbent plant fibers. Translation, scoop once and you're done. Find it at a pet store near you and save $2. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Pick up 2 tubes of Dogosuds.
Get the third tube free.
Peppermint, tea tree, lavender, Dogosud shampoo.
Made with all-natural coconut, jojoba, aloe. Great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
But no itchy, harsh chemicals.
Lather up, rinse away.
Try Dogosuds. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Morrison, it is fabulous that there are veterinarians such as yourself who can help our pets. But sometimes we go, okay, you just feel helpless because you think there's nothing that can be done. What are some of the advances that are occurring right now in veterinary cardiology that just even amaze you?
Yeah, well, through my residency program at Colorado State University, what I always felt was amazing was every 2 weeks or so, we would have a open heart surgery. And we would do valve repair and replace. That was a pretty intense endeavor, but it's always amazing to take over the responsibility of eat the body's blood during the procedure. Even more fascinating these days is the development of minimally invasive procedures that can make very minor manipulations to the heart that could be life and death in some scenarios. I'll give you an example. There's a congenital abnormality called a patent ductus arteriosus, and basically that's a fancy word for the vessel that communicates between the pulmonary artery and the aorta, basically allowing bypass of blood past the lungs to the body, since nobody's using lungs during utero. And sometimes that vessel can not close. And when that occurs, about 50% of our patients wouldn't survive a year. But in this day and age, with the ability to enter the body through arteries and veins and place different devices in this vessel, we're basically allowed to occlude this vessel from the inside, and that gives a normal longevity to a patient who otherwise might not survive the year.
So you're not even, as they say, cracking the chest. You're just going through a vessel and reaching the heart and doing the procedure with no incision other than into that vessel.
You're absolutely right. We take a catheter, we dilate that vessel, and then we pass very long catheters through the arterial and the venous system to get to the heart, and then we can make manipulations in the heart itself.
Kind of like working on an engine going through the tailpipe. Amazing. What else surprises
you? I'll use that.
What else impresses you? There's so much that impresses me.
Yeah. So to drive the heart rate, and depending on the contractility of the heart or the amount of movement that the patient is experiencing, can give a patient with a pacemaker either a greater heart rate or decrease the heart rate based on the requirements that patient might be needing at that time.
I was reading in one of our journals about a procedure that's now occurring in France, and they're doing a lot with King Charles Spaniels with their primary heart problem. And they're stopping the heart. I believe they're putting in new valves. Are you familiar with that? Have you heard of this?
Yeah. During my residency at Colorado State University, we had a surgeon named Chris Orton who would lead our surgical team in performing a cardiopulmonary bypass. That's basically when you take over the responsibility of pumping the blood through the body and oxygenating that blood. And then we would stop the heart for a period of time as we would go in surgically and either replace that valve with a cow or pig valve, or we would repair the valve. And then we would recover the patient slowly, and after about a week or two, they'd be ready for discharge.
That is just, people, it's amazing. And I'm sure there are people that are listening to this going, that must be thousands upon thousands of dollars to have this done. This is just a pet. How can somebody in any clear conscience spend that money on a pet when they should be donating it to charity or there's some other reason they could use that money? How do you view that?
Yeah, I often try to take myself out of the money equation only because, you know, the value of money is different to different people. And often we do have to make difficult decisions based on financial reasons. But on the other side of the coin, there are a lot of people out there, and I, again, try not to be biased or have any preconceived notions as to who might be willing and who might not to potentially intervene that in a way that requires a decent amount of finances.
And that's perfect because no matter what the procedure is in veterinary medicine, yes, it is your decision. But I'll always tell people when you get a pet, it's for life, their life. So make sure that that free kitten is one that you can afford to take care of because expenses do rise very, very quickly. Pet insurance is always a good idea to get too. So Dr. Morrison, there are times when procedures such as a valve replacement, it's just not feasible. Medications, I know there is just a plethora of various medications that are now on my shelf that I can use for my patients. How has veterinary medicine and pharmacology changed with regard to your area of expertise, hearts, and how is it making a difference?
Yeah, well, we've come a long way in a short period of time when it comes to medical management of cardiac disease. Thankfully, the heart as an organ is very similar to human hearts. Same four chambers, same four valves, potentially 90-95% of the receptors in the heart are actually identical. So we're able to take a lot of information from human medicine and apply it to veterinary medicine cardiology. So I like to say that we test on human subjects before we use it in our pet patients.
That's a great way of doing it. What are some of the advances in pharmacology that really has stood out and you think is making a major difference now?
Yeah, probably the most important medication that we tend to use as a cornerstone would be a medication referred to as furosemide. That medication will tell the kidneys to produce more urine. And if we are developing a condition referred to as congestive heart failure, which basically just means that the heart, as a pump, instead of pumping the blood forward, is allowing that pressure to build up behind like a dam, and the heart can't handle the blood volume that it's required to pump, often we can administer that medication, furosemide, and that will pull just enough fluid out of the body so the fluid isn't accumulating in areas of the body like the lungs, and we can breathe a lot easier.
So it's a diuretic, something that's making that pet urinate more.
You're absolutely right. A diuretic, often referred to in human medicine as the water pill.
Ah, very good. So, Dr. Morrison, we know that our pet has a heart issue. We've done the interventions. We've seen the specialists like you. But then there are those people that go, okay, I don't think my dog or cat does have a heart issue. Is there anything that I can do to prevent it, to try to decrease the chances that it will develop cardiac disease over time?
Yeah, I would say there's potentially a two-pronged defense in regards to preventing heart disease. One is definitely annual or biannual physical examinations with your regular veterinarian. They can pick up arrhythmias and murmurs, as we've discussed earlier. But potentially even more importantly would be the ability to monitor a pet at home. Something simple that a pet owner could do at home would be to monitor the sleeping respiratory rate of their pet. Normally, the sleeping respiratory rate should be slow, very slight, and hard to detect. Technically, it's less than 32 breaths per minute or a breath every 2 seconds. If this sleeping respiratory rate were to elevate, become more labored or more rapid, we would be concerned with the body's inability to obtain oxygen from the lungs. And one of the reasons why that could occur would be that fluid backing up in the lungs from the heart, something referred to as congestive heart failure. The other thing that could be monitored at home would be exercise tolerance. This is a good way to monitor cardiac output. So if we're still able to go as fast and as far as ever, that's wonderful. But if there seems to be an unknown reason why our pets are slowing down or quitting exercise early or even having fainting episodes, those would all be indications that a cardiac disease is a potential. And we should always evaluate sooner rather than later.
How about weight? I know that's one of the concerns I always have trying to tell people you got to keep that pet's weight under control because being obese puts such a load on that heart. Does it do anything else besides just make it more difficult for them to move around?
Yeah. Controlling weight can be important for a number of reasons, from arthritis to cardiac disease. And fat tissue does have a lot of blood volume. So as we kind of mentioned before, all the heart is a fancy pump that's responsible for pushing all that blood volume forward. And if you have an increased blood volume because, just say, we're well endowed in the fat department, then that can have an increased tack to the heart itself, and that could make it more likely that we develop things like congestive heart failure.
So watch your pet, see what it's doing at home, keep a log of its resting respiratory rate. That's important to do. Watch for its ability to exercise. As we get older, we just can't keep up with those youngsters anymore, but you shouldn't have a major change. I always say watch for coughing. Coughing that seems, especially in the morning or after they've been sleeping and they wake up, they're getting more of a cough. That's a concern. See that veterinarian once a year if they're a younger pet. I like it if they're 7 years of age or older, twice a year, because so much can change in a short amount of time. Get to know that veterinarian well and have a really good team approach to taking care of that pet of yours. Anything else that you want to add to that, Dr. Morrison?
No, that sounds like an equation for success. So thank you very much. It was a wonderful conversation.
And if someone needs you, they can always go to our website and they get information on how to get in touch with Dr. Thomas T.J. Morrison. Are there a lot of colleagues, board-certified veterinary cardiologists throughout the United States, or are you a rare breed?
Yeah, well, when I became board-certified, I think I was number 130. At this point, I think there's 250 of us, but there are more and more training programs, and we are creating more and more cardiologists because the demand is very high. The supply is very low, but we're doing our best to do all we can.
And I know one of the things that we use at my practice is some telemedicine. So reading all those squiggles, as you call the EKG, can sometimes be a little bit frustrating. So with telemedicine, I know we can send our ultrasounds to someone such as yourself, the EKG to specialist. Before we stop this conversation, what's your view on telemedicine? Do you like it? Do you oppose to it?
Yes, I think telemedicine is a wonderful modality. We've developed a Coast to Coast Cardiology telemedicine division, and we're probably reading somewhere between 30 and 50 different cases a day, x-rays, ECGs, ultrasounds, blood work, blood pressures, you name it. We want all the information possible. We create a report, put that information together, and provide that to the family veterinarian. And with that backing, it allows the family veterinarian to make the best treatment choices possible. And more importantly, what kind of follow-up might be entailed in regards to that cardiac condition, as well as prognosis. So all of this information can be very beneficial, and we have developed wonderful relationships with family veterinarians around the world, actually, in terms of helping them with their patients and cardiac issues.
Well, Dr. Morrison, this was fascinating. I think, you know, people right now are even hearing about blood pressures being taken. It's like, yes, you can take a blood pressure reading from a pet. It takes a little bit of skill, but it can be done. So I so appreciate you being with us today and showing how much that cardiologists are in demand, and you're just moving all over California and the world giving this great service. So if you have questions about your pet's heart, best thing to do, number one, see your veterinarian. Don't delay. It can have some good outcomes, especially if they're caught early and with the help of someone such as Dr. Morrison, a board-certified cardiologist. So please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to be that best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.